Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One alive, one dead. One fictional. It's up to you who you choose. You pick them all. It's up to you who you choose. You pick them all. Who you having? Make it who you wish. This is your dinner party. And it's your guest list.
Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of Guest List with Jake Lambers, the podcast where I interview comedians to find out who would be their perfect dinner party guests. But they can only pick three. One has to be alive, one has to be dead, and one has to be fictional. This week, we are joined by Sean McLaughlin. Now, two things. One, I'm going to keep the intro very short because it's a long episode and I wanted to try and keep it under an hour. Three things, actually. Two, in this interview, chat, we talk about the fact... Now, Sean and I are both lucky enough to have played stadiums and supported big acts, so we talk about that, but I want you to know that I kept it in because it's interesting, I think, but I want you to know that I'm fully aware because it might sound a bit crass, but we talk about the fact mainly that we shouldn't, it's insane that we're there playing these rooms. Thirdly, we start this conversation talking about Sean's show, which is on YouTube and Spotify, and it's amazing. I genuinely cannot recommend it highly enough. And a lot of people have messaged me to say that they've sort of discovered new acts via this podcast and then gone on and sort of checked their work out, which is brilliant. And definitely do that with Sean's, because his show is, as I say in the podcast, one of the best shows I've ever seen. As usual, please like and rate and subscribe and do share on social media. Thanks to everybody who does that and tags me in things. It's amazing. Thank you very much. And please continue to do so. It means a lot and it does make a difference. And now please enjoy my conversation with Sean McLaughlin. I still consider, when I talk to people, one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Oh, thanks, man. That's really sweet. That's really nice.
And obviously for people to listen, that's available, isn't it, just on YouTube or something?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's just been released as an album as well. It's the same
that's
recording.
Cool.
And the album has got a bit more in it. So yeah, do both.
A lot of, because in America, it's a bigger thing, isn't it, to release albums. Comedy albums are a real common thing, which I think are coming over here a lot more. But they always say... Well, I say that. I listened to a few American comedians on their podcasts who say they release albums. People still want to watch that same show because there's jokes that just didn't make sense only audibly, or they just, once you see it visually, it's a completely other experience.
Yeah, I guess so. I sort of worried because I'd put it onto YouTube, the recording, while there were still negotiations with this label about putting it out as an album. And I'd done an album with them a couple of years ago, which I really enjoyed. And because of that American sort of comedy album culture, I just thought it'd be great. And I've always loved them. And I always wondered why it wasn't a bigger deal here. But it seems like there were no problems with me putting this, basically the same recording, out as an album, because I think it's just viewed as two totally different things. Like,
yeah.
The market for almost the album is almost like, because they have like comedy radio stations and stuff in America, and it's I think they're viewed as just different revenue streams, and one hopefully feeds the other. So
where is it? Where can people get the album?
Oh, just listen on Spotify, man. Don't pay.
All right.
It's on Spotify, so is the other one, and then the full show's on YouTube as well, if you want to watch it. And I'm glad how it turned out. Okay, I can't complain.
Where's the record? Where did you film it?
Top secret.
Oh, lovely.
Secret in London. Yeah, it was really great because it was like a Monday night. It was kind of, there was no support act. It was like, we could have done it so differently, but it was the second crack at recording it. I'd recorded it on the tour in Brighton and it just wasn't good enough. I thought it just wasn't good enough. So then we recorded it again and it was a great show because it sort of started okay, but then just, you could feel it building as I was performing it, which is, right. I always find those the most fun shows to do.
What I also, I don't know if you have been doing this, I've been watching a lot of comedy, like documentaries. I don't know if you saw the Comedy Store documentary that they made. It's on Sky, about the LA Comedy Store. And it's like a six-parter, and it's incredible. And then I was watching one recently, which is free on Amazon Prime, about the comic strip in New York.
Yeah.
And I've realized how... over there, like we were saying about the records and the albums, they've got such a better sort of culture for comedy. And I feel like over here, like Top Secret's amazing. We're all going to look back at Top Secret. So if it went in 15, 20 years, we'd look back and go, that place was incredible. Like, people should film stuff there that should sort of be documented, because it's we'd all consider it, it's the best club, certainly in London.
I think without any doubt, it's the best club in London. And that's no disrespect to all the other clubs who put me in that I love. but Top Secret, I feel like Top Secret opening in London, and I guess Hot Water opening in Liverpool, sort of around the same time, I do think they kind of changed the game, because they sort of seemed to get audiences that were kind of, I mean, this is so boring to listen to for non-comedians. I really don't like how we view ourselves as inferior to America or North America in stand-up sense. I really think the comedians here are better in general. Mm. I think the culture here is probably better. It's less respected and it has less kind of cultural value.
Yeah.
But I do think there's nowhere better to be a comedian than this country. Because I went to New York in December 2019, so basically the last time I could have gone, and I loved it. I loved doing the gigs. I loved, you know, I did a solo show. I loved it. But it was at the first show, I was a bit like, fuck, I don't know, man. This is, you know, you're stepping up a level here, and you're not,
right?
You're not. It's like, oh, they're just as up and down as anywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, the audiences are probably a bit, have probably lower standards.
Okay. I mean, so where did you perform?
I did the Gotham Comedy Club. I did Stand Comedy Club. And I did a solo show at Union Hall. And it was great.
Wow.
I worked with some amazing people. But I also worked with some absolute doctor hacks. Who would not have lasted 5 minutes at a British club. So I think it's, you know, right. I think we should puff ourselves up a bit more on that, in that sense.
I completely agree. And I was messaging another great club. I was messaging James Gill from Always Be Comedy about that Comedy Store documentary. And I was saying to him, we need to make more of a deal of how good it is over here. We just sort of shout, you're right, and rave about it a lot more, because we sort of believe it's in their sort of... what is it, in their culture to sort of big themselves up, and it is literally the complete opposite for us. So of course we're going to fail to do that and not make a big fuss over it like we should, because we're bred that way.
Yeah, I think, I hope, I mean, I've just thought of this just straight off the top of my head, so this could all be bollocks, but I do think kind of around halfway through last year, when there was that big moment when we realised, oh, we are going to have to all really fight to keep this industry alive, and yeah, there was that appeal to the government for some funding. That was sort of the first time I think I felt like the industry, the comedy industry, came together and was like, we're really great. We've built something really good here and we shouldn't let it die. And I wonder if that can carry on.
That's so true.
British comics are just so ripe for exploitation. Like, just like, we're such mugs. You can tell us anything. Like, yeah, you need to do this. And we're like, yeah, cool, cool, cool. Like, the way, the amount of money people lose at the end of the Fringe every year.
Yeah.
Like that. I hope, I wonder if that feeling will kind of stick. I think it should.
That's such, it is such a good point. And it's so funny that it's literally when we are at our lowest ebb, when we our only option is to turn around and beg, that we finally say, yeah, actually, we are quite good.
That's it. We're not even asking to keep the whole thing going. We're just asking for a life support machine. Like, we've got to be worth that. Come on. Just don't pull the plug yet, Rishi, please.
And yeah, you and I, now that we've talked about, I feel we can balance this, now that we've talked about our whole industry sort of dying, we can also now balance that out with you and I both very lucky enough to sort of have played, I hate the word, stadia.
Yeah.
You support Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
And a lot in Europe.
Yeah. Like you did. What were the ones you did in, were you the European dates with McIntyre?
Yeah. So we did, we went and did Norway. We did 4 nights in Norway. Have you done, like,
was it the Spectrum in Oslo?
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was, and at a time I realised arenas, it was one of the few that I think could work because it was almost somehow intimate, which sounds insane because it's thousands and thousands of people.
I think it's a really unusual quirk in my career, and I don't know if you feel the same, where I've become accustomed to understanding the acoustics of mega venues. And it's like, I have absolutely no right to need to know this. But somehow I do. I think it is probably, I do think being a tour support on that level, being any tour support, I think is great. And I've done it all, you know. I feel very lucky. I supported a lot of people at various stages. I think when you're opening for like a big star, like, you know, we've been lucky enough to do in massive venues, it's probably the best job, I think, in comedy. Like, I do think it's
Yes. Because
really, I view it's like, I'm playing the same venues as these people. I'm playing the same crowds as these people, and I don't even need the hassle, like, without the hassle of actually becoming really successful. like I'm basically living the same life. The money's less, obviously, but I also am not a superstar. I can go out for a coffee and not be bothered. So
I'm so used to driving, parking outside and walking into the venue. But with these ones, you just sort of, a massive garage door opens and you sort of drive into backstage.
Yeah, and then wild.
This guy, a Norwegian guy, he was there all 4 nights. And he came up to me on the last night, we were in Trondheim. And he said, what do you want for dinner? Every time he'd come up to me, he'd go, what do you want for dinner? And I'd be like, oh, what is there? And he would list off all these foods. And I was like, this is insane. And he would be like, there's Chinese, Italian, got pasta. I'd be like, amazing. And then we were there, and I remember being in Trondheim and thinking, really fancy. Yeah, fancy. Like, I'll have the Chinese food. I'll have some Chinese food. He's like, what do you want? I sort of gave like a random sort of, you know, well, a usual Chinese sort of order. And then I walked off stage, and it would be ready in my like dressing room for me when I'd walked off stage. And I said to him, I was like, this is incredible. Why is all the food here so good? He said that we've just got everything. I said, the arenas back home don't have this. And he looked to me like I was an idiot and went, no. I'd go out and get this for you. And I realized he took my order. I walked onto stage. He would go out to like the local takeaway, get my food for me, bring it back and have it ready for me. And me, like an idiot, was going, oh, cheers, mate. Thinking he'd like walked around the corner, just gone to their ridiculous buffet.
How quickly it spoils you. Like, you're immediately used to that level of service.
And then the night after we got back from Norway, I was gigging, actually, I was with Ramesh in Ipswich, and I drove myself there, not complaining, but I drove myself to the venue, and the guy who was manning the like backstage car park would not believe that I was there to open for Ramesh. So he kept going, so if I let you in, you're going to park over there and you're going to walk through that back door, are you? And I was like, well, if that's where I go, yeah, I guess so. And he goes, right, because it's locked, you have to knock on it, and then Ramesh's tour manager will open the door. He'll see you. He'll know who you are, and he'll let you in, will he? And I went, well, I assume that's what's going to happen. Yeah, that's what's happened every other time. And he watched. So I went and I knocked. And then obviously classically, there's no answer. I'm just there banging on this door, calling, trying to come in. And then finally, Grazia comes out. And I did say to him on front, I was like, can you just pretend for a minute that you don't know who I am? But obviously, that was a very confusing thing for him to hear. So he didn't play along with it at all. It was a real fall from grace.
I think that's the other side of it. I do think even if you're doing tour support for that, on a level like that, it does keep you humble enough. When yes. at our level, you're still doing a lot of the meat and potato stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think I remember when I did, I wasn't the tour support for Gervais on the tour before this one. I was sort of the backup. So I did about 10 dates overall. But one of the ones I did was in Leeds on a Friday night. And it was like the biggest date, I think, in the UK. It was like 8,000 people or something. It was just so fun. It was such an incredible show. So that was the Friday night. And then the Saturday night, I was basically closing an open mic night in the basement of a steak restaurant. And I was just like, I don't know if I can deal with my head now. So I do think actually in a way that those sort of crazy shifts in mood and adrenaline have actually prepared me quite well for the pandemic, because there's sort of nothing emotionally that I haven't seen before.
It is comedy, and very lucky that it has major highs, because it really does have some manic lows.
I mean, you would never imagine. You would never imagine.
In fact, I do remember driving myself there in my quarter after Norway, having my head, for the point of juxtaposition, flown to Norway and back on a private jet. I was now winding down the window of a Corsa to make sure this guy and convince this guy knew that I was in fact meant to be at this next gig.
I mean, that's it, a private jet. I was thinking this the other day, we've actually shared a strange amount of, I was trying to think of like big moments in my life. Like, didn't we watch England's World Cup semi-final together?
Yes, we did.
In Streatham. That's genuinely one of the biggest nights of my life. One of the biggest nights of my...
Yeah. If we're talking about the roller coasters and major highs of manic lows of comedy, we had it all condensed there in 90 minutes.
100%. I honestly do think that hour between Kieran Trippier scoring in, what was it, the fourth minute?
Yeah.
And Croatia equalising was probably the most... I don't know if I'll ever feel like that again.
I could not agree more. We were literally on chairs, on tables. We were singing. We were done. It was like we were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was so confident. At half time, I went to the bar to ask if I could book the table for the final.
And you honored that booking. Through tears and gritted teeth.
Really wasn't the same. Cried out to a roast dinner watching the final. It was. I mean, at that point, I would have happily stayed there for the entire week, just carrying on drinking, waiting for the final.
It was quite a motley crew there as well, because I didn't know a few of the people there. It was like a couple of my school friends were there. There's a few other comics. There were some people from Melbourne that were there.
Yeah,
who
these Australian
seemed to
girls
be laughing at us.
Yeah,
we were enjoying the football.
Well, it must have looked like that. Suddenly, they're one of the few people who've come over here, and England is just what they imagined it to be. People literally jumping on tables, watching a football match. It was incredible, and I had a video. And do you remember I filmed you? They showed the replay of the goal. And I recorded the pub's reaction because I knew that was even going to be big. And it's an amazing video of you punching the air, even celebrating the replay going in.
Yeah, I remember that because I was wearing, I think I had like an England shirt on even. And I doubt I've still got that. I probably fucking threw it in the bin after that game. But I was just so into it. I was like Badil and Skinner in 96. Like, that's the level of...
I honestly think I used that as a moment to really make me feel sadder when the Euros was cancelled last year, that I was remembering I knew the highs. I was like, no, it wasn't just that I was going to miss football. I knew what it could be. I knew it could be us in a pub on a table I mean, if it's all open, we have to watch a game together this year.
I think we've got to. Me and you will we'll go to the pub, we'll book out the final preemptively.
Sean, there's been a knock at the door. It's your first guest of the evening. It's your live guest. So who's joining us? Who's at the door?
Well, this is the trickiest one for me.
Right.
Because, well, I don't know if they're still alive. But I'm assuming they are. And this is my old RE teacher. Am I allowed to name them? I don't want to name them.
Your RE teacher. I mean, high praise to any teacher who isn't some sort of 90-year-old lecturer from Oxbridge teaching you philosophy to get a mention in your a pivotal person out of, as I say, 7.5 billion people in the world.
Well, what I need to stress then at this point is that I am only inviting them out of spite because I hate them. I hate them.
Right.
I hate this person. It's the year 9 one. Now, I had two nightmare RE teachers when I was in secondary school, but the year 9 one really stuck with me because he really had it in for me. And I want to invite, I wish I'd had the confidence as a sort of 14-year-old, 15-year-old.
Yeah.
To ask him what his fucking problem was. And I think now, as someone in his early 30s, coming up to mid-30s, I would say, I have enough about me, because also he'd be very old and vulnerable now. So I would hold all the cards.
So, can I ask, at this point, I know you've done your show, which was sort of about you and religion. What is your religious state? What at the time?
I don't have a state.
Right, I mean, at 14, 15, you're, what are you there though? Would you be a religion or?
No state.
No.
I mean, grew up, it was a Catholic school.
That's, right.
I guess, relevant, but it was just state schools, comprehensive, so they couldn't lay it on that thick.
Yeah,
so actually,
okay.
I still think they laid it on thicker than they probably were allowed to, but whatever. It's more like, it's just, I mean, what can I tell you? It's nothing even to do with the subject. It's just
this teacher.
I just hated him so much. He always had a go at me. He's like, all I ever tried to do was try and like make it. Like, I'd do all the homework and I would just try and make it a bit creative. And he would just attack. And I was about to say I'm over it, but I think the fact that you asked this question and my first thought was, I want this prick and I want to show him, shows that actually I'm not over it. But I remember one incident in particular, which was we had to write ourselves evaluations on how we'd done. I think it was maybe halfway through the year.
Right.
That we then had to hand in with some homework or something. And I wrote in my evaluation, I wish I still had it. I basically was like a long sort of Aaron Sorkin-esque in my head, sort of brilliant paragraph about like, I think I've been treated really unfairly in this class. You know, I'm not an aggressive person. Maybe I talk a lot, but I try and be creative. I do everything I do is wrong. But I think if I'd have given this work to any other teacher, I would have got really good marks, all this stuff. And then a few weeks later, he held me back. This is a bit, like, my heart's going crazy even just telling this story. Right. This is a big moment for me as a young man. I think I was a boy who became a man in this moment. All right, Jake.
Wow. I feel like this is Desert Island Discs.
Yeah. Yeah. And he held me back to talk. I don't know what I'd done. I'd probably dropped a pencil or something. And he held me back. And he went through my workbook and he pointed at all the stuff he didn't like that I'd done in the year. He pointed at all of it. And then he got to the page where I'd written this thing.
Oh.
And I thought, I remember going, well, here we go. This is it. And then he just turned it and kept insulting the other work and ignored it. And I thought, I wasn't that perceptive as a young man, but I do remember that moment being like, God, you're a fucking coward, aren't you? Like, you really are. What a small man. Out of revenge, I'm going to invite him to this amazing dinner party to really get to grips with who he is.
I think you won.
Do you think so?
I think you've already won it because he would have hated that he now knows that you saw that he had seen that. Blimey, that's a confusing sentence. He now knows that you had seen that he had seen that essay.
Well, I don't. I mean, look, do I feel like he's won or do I feel that I've won? The end of the day, it's 20 years later and I'm on your podcast talking to you about it. And there's a good chance he's dead. So, yeah, I think I did win, actually. Do I think he's thought about me once in the last 20 years? I'd like to think he's thought about me every single day. And he's followed my career with keen interest and was delighted at my failures and has grown increasingly disgusted at my successes. I think he listens to my album every night and howls at the moon.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a draw.
I just think it's like, I don't know, man. I think it's hard for me to say I hate teachers because both of my parents are teachers. But I think
Were they teachers at this school?
No.
Right, okay. Right.
But I also am like, I don't know why. I do think like the way that he didn't deal with me attempting to stand up for myself. I just would love to, especially with some of the other guests I've got coming, I'm really thinking you're on the back foot emotionally. And I just want to know. I just want
to
know.
Well, a perfect time to move on then to see who else is turning up to this roasting.
I cannot imagine that this is making me come across well.
Hope some people maybe can relate. Maybe I would want to have a word with Mr. Sims and ask about some of his behaviour.
Mr. Sims,
yeah. And he always wore a green shirt. He looked a bit like... He looked like an angry Mr. Bean.
I bet the release of the Sims games absolutely ruined his career. That would ruin his life. He's got all these kids every day. Oh, Mr. Sims.
I'm gonna make you just start a fire in the corner of your kitchen and then just sort of
I'm gonna throw you into the pool and take away the ladder.
Well, on that dark
moment,
mine
was called mine was called Mr. Hubert.
Oh, we are doing it now.
Hubert, I don't know who you are because we are great rivals throughout history. Jake Lambert thinks I win.
Okay, there's another knock at the door. It's good timing. I think it's needed. It's getting a bit tense with you and Hubert.
It's not going to get any easier, mate.
God, here we go. Second guest. Your dead guest. They've arrived. You open the door. Who's there? It's a weird way to say it.
I hear the pitter-patter of tiny feet, as it is none other than Mr. Napoleon Bonaparte.
Okay, a huge choice. Sort of one of history's great figures, mm-hmm. Despite his size. What is your relationship with Napoleon Bonaparte?
Well, the short answer is I was sort of halfway through an audiobook about him, about his life. And then I never finished it. So it'd be good to just hear the rest of it from him. I read a book about him a few years ago and it stuck with me. A fascinating figure. I loved his life for good and for bad. And I just want to know what makes him tick. And I do think as well, like, bring it back to Mr. Hubert. I do think I've got Napoleon at my dinner party, Hubert. So...
It is impressive.
Maybe you should have let me draw those cartoons. Yeah.
So why Napoleon though? I'm sure you've read many books about history. Oh, is that a wrong assumption for me to make about you? Don't know where that's come from, to be honest.
A massive assumption. I've read a few. What counts as history though? I mean, that's, you know, what counts?
Oh, yesterday onwards or backwards.
I guess. There you go. I've read a few, not, you know.
So would he be, would this guy, sorry, this guy is a way to reference Napoleon. Would he be your choice on Mastermind? It'd be a good reason to study him.
Yeah, it would. I mean, I do think he, based on my admittedly limited knowledge, he is an absolutely incredible figure. Like, I do think he's so famous, and I actually think he's more amazing than I realised, and maybe that we're taught to understand. And I don't know whether it's because his main rival for a lot of his life was the British, and so we sort of naturally put him down.
Oh.
But he was so unbelievable. Like, born in Corsica, like this sort of relatively modest family, somehow ended up as a general in the French army, ended up leading France, like a pivotal figure in multiple revolutions. Did apparently loads of stuff like unifying and codifying Europe in terms of tax and in terms of higher education. Like, his impact is apparently still felt today. And just fought another cool wars. And then he got taken out by some alliance with like the Russians and the Austrians, I think. And he was put into exile. And then he came back, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a bit where he comes back into France and there's all these rumors like, oh my God, apparently Napoleon's back. And he sort of builds, he almost builds his army from scratch on the fly and then retakes Paris.
So, Blimey. Is there, and this is a...
I do think he's pretty, pretty cool guy.
So there's a very lazy way to learn, but there must be films on this.
Oh, you'd hope so. I mean,
why don't they, you know, why don't they make a really cool trilogy on that? And then actually it's a good way to learn. And then you can watch an amazing... That's the Netflix series I want to watch next.
Yeah.
Make that.
I think he's weird though, because I think it's like... He also... I mean, a lot of people died.
Shouldn't be.
You don't know if... I mean, I guess it's all open for interpretation, isn't it? Because he fought in so many wars. He was probably a warmonger. And he was also...
What?
But he was also... I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's why I want to meet him. Who is this guy?
What sort of era was he knocking about in?
I guess he was sort of late 1700s to sort of early 1800s. Battle of Waterloo, I think, was 1815 or 1816, which was the one where he was truly defeated. That was his big out by Wellington. The first book I read about him was a book about his rivalry with the Duke of Wellington that was very interesting and good. But the author of the book was, in my opinion, he didn't just like Wellington. I think he was actually sort of in love with him and sort of bigged him up in a way that felt really unnatural.
Oh, do you know what? I mean, you've gone for a very highbrow. I'm going to go for a very lowbrow example. During lockdown, I've been trying to read as much as I can. And I've read my first Jack Reacher book, right? So very lowbrow. I've got the complete opposite of you here. But is it Lee Child? Is clearly so in love with this guy that he's created. It's insane to read. It's like, it goes from him sort of ranging from him sort of taking out six guys or four of them just running away at the mere sight of Jack Reacher turning the corner to Jack Reacher just waking himself up at 7 o'clock because he can set his own internal alarm clock.
I mean, that's so funny. I just find that so funny. Are they good, the Jack Reacher books?
Depends what you're after. It's the equivalent of watching a reading
I'm
action.
After, I'm after information about Napoleon and my old RE teacher's whereabouts.
I'd love to read the book series on him helping a 33-year-old man find his old RE teacher. But they're... Very easy read. I'd say it's a palate cleanser. If you're reading a couple, I've also got The Last Tattooist of... Oh, it's not even The Last Tattooist, it's just The Tattooist of Auschwitz, which I haven't read yet, but I'll probably read a Jack Reacher before and after that.
Yeah, that's what I need. I think I like reading mystery books now.
Oh.
Because I just think I never used to read them and now I'm sort of quite into those. So maybe Jack Reacher would be good. I really liked the first Jack Reacher film. I don't know if
I think it's hilarious that they cast Tom Cruise. It's insane. I think he's supposed to be 6'7" or something in the books.
I mean, that's perfect, isn't it? It's perfect.
I think Tom Cruise is literally 5'7". It's literally a foot shorter than the guy that they went for.
Yeah.
Maybe even shorter than that.
I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, he can't be shorter than 5'7".
Actually, no, that is silly.
Surely not.
No, you're right.
I mean, I know he's not tall, but like 5'4". I read a book when I was younger. I remember I read a book, and I believe this until quite recently, that Dustin Hoffman was 4'11". And I thought, oh, that's good. It's not, it can't possibly be true. It just can't possibly be true. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's a lot of people that height who have good careers.
But you'd know. That's
I think you'd know, wouldn't you? It's Tootsie. That would be built into the plot of every one of his films.
Yeah, yeah. That would be, yeah, your typecast. You can't be 4'11" and not have that sort of slightly play a huge part in the pun part in your career.
Yeah, in the same way that if you're 6'9", which is like people are that tall, but if you're an actor,
yeah, it's yeah, the maybe Rock not. Isn't playing Tootsie.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing though, isn't it? The Rock is like, do they always reference the fact that he's just a massive bloke? I don't know. Maybe they just don't reference it.
Maybe that's like is it Brad Pitt always has to be eating in his films? He always has to have a scene where he's eating. So maybe they just say, Dustin Hoffman is, don't mention his height. And The Rock is, do mention that he's massive.
Would you have one if you were a film star? Would you have an equivalent? Like once a film you have to be eating, would you have a stipulation like that for you? Like to make you look cool or whatever?
Do you know what I would have? And this is, again, never been asked this question before, so it's just come from it. I remember being about 7 years old and being in a park. Yeah, I think it was Runnymede. And I saw a boy who must have been a couple of years older than me. He was bending down on one knee, tying up his shoelace while his younger sister sort of jumped on his back. But he sort of kept his composure and sort of tied his own shoelace. And I don't think I maybe couldn't tie my shoelace at that age, whatever age I was. And I remember thinking, that was the drive that I went, I want to learn to tie my shoelace because that looked so cool.
Wait a minute. I've asked you, what thing would you build into your film contracts to make you more impressive? And your thing is, once in every film, I have to tie my shoelaces.
I think, because going back to, I think, 6 or 7 year old me, however old I was, I'm not sure what age you're supposed to know how to tie your shoelace, but I think he would love that if he knew he grew up to be that.
That has genuinely blown me away. I just would love to be, I'd love to be your agent. Yeah, you're in. You're getting 15 million. Big superhero film. What are your demands? I want to tie my shoelaces. Any point.
Just cut to me doing it. It doesn't even make sense.
Just why are you doing that? I just want to give hope to all those kids out there who can't tie their shoelaces.
That might be it. That guy was the inspiration for me to tie mine. Maybe that will teach people to
mine's probably from a similar place, actually.
What would you do?
But I don't think it's that. I mean, it's not as bad as that. I think mine would be like I'd do a handstand or something. Every film I do a handstand just to, but I can't do one, but I'd get a stunt double. So people think I can do one.
Have you seen the remake of Schindler's List? Sean McLaughlin's got a part in it. It is insane.
I mean, it is. Yeah, it is. I mean, imagine that. They've remade, first of all, to even think we're going to remake Schindler's List. We've got Lambert and McLaughlin in. Lambert can't stop tripping over his laces.
You need some sort of character development. It's going to start with me tripping over my laces and you just sort of up against them all trying to figure it out.
My character development is I walk on my feet for the first half and then the second half of the film I'm just on my hands. It's never explained.
Subconsciously,
the audience get it. They go, oh, something's changed about this man. This war has taken its toll on him.
Oh, God. I enjoyed that. I also do want to make a side note, actually. I don't want to be the sort of person that's recommending Jack Reacher books to people. Can I recommend instead Matt Haig? As a palate cleanser.
All you want, mate. Yeah, go.
Yeah, sorry. I think that would just play in the back of my mind if I didn't get that out of the way. I think that's a good palate cleanser.
I don't want people to think that I'm the type of guy who just reads big historical one of, you know, one of the most recent books I read was Mike Myers' Guide to Canada. So, you know,
I didn't know he'd written that.
No, I didn't either. But a fan of both.
Found it.
Mike Myers and the Nation. So I read it.
Put them together. Lovely. Yeah. I recently read Bill Bryson's Notes from a Small Island. Didn't like it.
That's so interesting. Why didn't you like it?
I'll tell you why I didn't like it. I found it to be quite repetitive and that he kept going to places and they sounded really depressing. And then he would sort of leave and go to another place. And mainly because he was staying in these little hotels with these sort of, you know, it was raining or whatever. And he was having these, like, you know, just these dinners in these small dingy restaurants. It just reminded me too much of the worst parts of being a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like you're a millionaire. You could go anywhere. Why are you going here? Because I read, I didn't finish it, oddly enough, because I didn't like it, because he went back and did a second one 20 years later. He did Notes on a Small Island, and then he did another travel book in Britain about how much it's changed, and I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
I found it quite snooty.
Yeah, okay.
He seemed to like really insult a lot of the people that he comes across. I'm like, well, they don't owe you anything, Bill.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And he was complaining about it 20 years before. What? Don't go again then. Also, there's an incredible bit which has aged so badly where he's in Manchester in, I think it's 1994, complaining that Manchester has no identity or any scene whatsoever, which is basically a year before Oasis and some of the best bands you'll ever know have come out, where Manchester United a couple of years later go on to like win the treble and have some of like literally had the class of 92 coming through at that point. And he just goes there and just doesn't like it because the shops are a bit run down.
Yeah, I mean, I never got that. Like, my parents all loved him and I sort of read his books when I was a kid and I always thought, oh, this guy's a... I mean, not... look, if you're listening, Bill... who am I to judge you? But keep a more open mind. I mean, imagine saying that about Manchester in 1994. Freaking go to the Hacienda, Bryson.
There's so much going on. Of course you're not going to like it. You're a man in your 40s going around on his own moaning and complaining. You've been on the road for 6 months.
You're just you're a dumb old Yankee doodle with a bus pass. I remember I went to Australia a couple of years ago and he's written a book about Australia. And I was in the airport about to fly there and I found it just in the WH Smith and I flicked through the first chapter and it's just him laying into Australia. Is that what you need to be a travel writer? This guy's made millions of just basically being paid to go places and insult them. I don't like that.
Yeah.
No one's asking you to go there, Bill. You asked to go there. No one's putting a gun up your head.
Without sounding too Brexit, just go home.
Just fuck off, Bill.
Back to where you came from.
Go back.
And on that note of the culture podcast, we'll there's another knock at the door.
Jake? Sorry, Jake. Can I just say, I have absolutely no idea if this is going well or not. No idea. I had a coffee that was way too strong this morning. Mentally, I'm all over the shop. I think this is going fine, but it might not be.
I think if people were to say there's a podcast where the host sits down with the guest and they discuss their perfect dinner party guest, one alive, one dead, one fictional, you're going to think very Radio 4. What's happened is two comedians in their 30s have sat down and have a chat. And if you told them that bit of extra information, this is exactly where they think it would go.
Two people who have lost their livelihoods at a time of immense emotional strain on them and the country are people having cumulative breakdowns on a podcast about a dinner party.
Historians might look back at this as one of the best documentations of what the pandemic did to people's mental state and really study the point where, for no reason whatsoever, the two of them stopped to really lay into Bill Bryson.
Let's face it, thoroughly decent, average people who have no real problem with anyone, which I don't think I do, I don't think you do, have got to a point by March 2021, we are publicly laying into Bryson. National treasure, Bill Bryson.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Knock at the door. Third and final knock at the door of the evening. Fictional guest. Who is joining Mr. Hubert and Napoleon Bonaparte?
Well, we talk about palate cleansers in life. No greater palate cleanser than my third guest. The lovable, the unmistakable R2-D2 from Star Wars.
Right, okay.
Just for listeners to know, Jake visibly had to stop his head from shaking there. I could see your head going, fuck it.
Handed me a grenade, pulled the pin out, deal with this.
R2-D2. I love that. I love that little droid.
Would you understand what he was saying? Or does C-3PO are going to have to come to be the translation?
Here's the problem. I thought of some other people.
Right.
And I just... But what I came back to, I just want a slam dunk of a guest, I think.
Right, yes.
A slam dunk. Because I thought, I don't even like Star Wars that much, to be honest. But I like it a bit. But I thought I'd be cool to get someone, it's fictional, so really push the boat out.
Yeah.
I thought I'll get like a robot or an alien or something. But I thought like Data from Star Trek, oh God, just be boring. He's just so dull. And then I think C-3PO, I'd throw him in the bar.
Be a nightmare.
He's such a nightmare.
Yeah.
R2-D2, if he's on good form, I just think he's cute. He's charming. You could pop a tray on him.
Yeah, useful.
He'd be great.
And having sci-fi there, this robot that's been to space, is an extra sort of two fingers up to your RE teacher.
100%. I mean, I've got Napoleon and R2-D2 in my house, Hubert. And you're drawing on your teacher's pension, sitting in your lab, annoyed at me. I think R2-D2 would be good. He wouldn't eat. So there's more food.
True. It's good to have a dinner party on a budget.
I like the little bleeps and blops. I like the noises that it makes.
Is the same guy still playing? Is it Dustin
Hoffman?
Kenny
Baker. Got Dustin in.
Is it still Kenny Baker in the suit?
I think Kenny Baker may have passed away. I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Someone else is that to. Oh, okay. Who's in there?
I hope there's someone in there. I mean, I'm not just getting the. By the way, when I say it, it's not fictional. It's not literally the model. I'm talking the character of R2.
The character, correct?
The
correct.
The assumption is that I've just there's someone in there.
Yeah, I've got confused by my own podcast. The format I created has sort of thrown me.
If I wanted someone, I mean, theoretically then, R2-D2 could have been living, dead, and fictional. I mean, I could fit all the criteria.
It's a lovely choice, but you're not even a big fan of Star Wars.
Yeah, I guess I am.
I guess he is one of the most famous characters ever created.
Yeah, I just think it's a really cute little droid. Always puts a smile on my face.
What's the new one? What's the ball thing?
BB-8.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
Not to sort of slam your guest, but...
That's the... No, I didn't take it as an insult until you said it was one. I think that's when Star Wars is irresistible. I don't know. Are you a Star Wars fan?
I watch them.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a fan. I wouldn't sort of, I couldn't talk about them at any sort of length. But when the film comes out, I watch it. And in fact, yeah. I liked one of the recent ones that people didn't like, which I think was the second one of the new lot.
Mm.
Again, I couldn't even tell you the name. It was one people slated, and I watched it. And I thought it was really funny. It was really sort of self-aware. Maybe it was The Last Jedi. Yeah, it was really self-aware.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny this. I loved Star Wars when I was a kid, and that I'm like you. I watch the films when they come out.
Yeah,
I sort of think most of them are pretty bad.
Yeah,
I'm sort of at the point now where I'm like, these are all pretty bad. But I do think the designs of the robots are so great that I kind of just watch it for that almost.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. It's lovely to watch. I remember once at an award ceremony, BB-8 came out onto stage and I couldn't figure out how that was happening. How? Because the whole ball moves, but it's got a head and the head doesn't move. How's that happening?
Are you asking me that sincerely? How is that happening? I don't know.
I don't know what I wanted you to say.
Well, let me talk you through the mechanics of BB-8.
Did we ever find out what R2-D2 stands for?
I don't know. Probably did. I don't know what it is. I don't know. But I won't understand. But what I keep saying it's a he, but it isn't. I mean, I guess is it a male? It's sort of...
That's sort of true.
It's sort of outside of the gender spectrum, I think, a being like R2. But... it could play that clip of Princess Leia. That'd be fun. I'd like to. Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be like a really fun after dinner thing. He could just play that. Look at that, Napoleon. What do you think of that?
This is the part of the podcast where we do quick fire questions, Sean, to find out.
Have we started? I didn't know we started before.
We'll get a bit of a gauge of what it'd be like to have a dinner party with Sean McLaughlin. Some couple of quick fire questions. You ready?
Yeah. Go.
Beer or wine?
At a dinner party, you'd say wine. But I probably, I don't know. I like them both, I suppose.
Quickly sort of derailed the quick fire round.
Sorry. Yeah. How quick is quick? I mean, you know.
By being slow and selecting both.
All right. Do you want fine? Take another dig at the guest. Don't worry.
Whiskey or gin?
Whiskey.
Good choice, me too. Meat or vegan?
Vegan.
Are you vegan?
At home I am because my wife is.
Right.
I'm a vegetarian. Vegetarian on the streets, vegan in the streets.
Starter or dessert?
Starter.
Lovely.
Not, but mainly because my dessert, I've got such a sweet tooth that it would never end. So I have to be picky about the sweet stuff I eat. Yeah,
I sort of have a cup of tea with a treat about 4 or 5 times a day.
My one is peanut butter. I eat peanut butter now with a spoon, and that's kind of, and there's still enough. It's not good, but there's enough goodness in there. Like there's at least protein and
still
that sweet kind of hit.
Yeah, and vegan.
And vegan.
Music or games?
What's happening? What is this question? What do I prefer? Music or games?
I don't know what I mean. I think for entertainment, the thing, are we playing music or we
music
sort of playing 100%. Games? Yeah, cool.
I find playing games stress. I would find that very stressful.
Well, thanks for joining in.
Yeah,
culture or politics?
Cultural politics. That's the same these days, isn't it? Bloody hell. I'd have to go. You go culture, wouldn't you?
I reckon. And then,
I'm not talking politics. Not with Napoleon. Here we
go. No. Or your RE teacher.
No.
I imagine he's a bit right-wing from the sounds of him.
Yeah, probably.
Sweeping generalisation. R2-D2. I wonder who his politics like. It'd be very left, actually. He screams Labour.
We are all over the map with this, aren't we? R2-D2, I wonder what his politics lie. When this started, I would never have imagined that sentence. I think he's an anarchist. I think he just wants... I think he's
an anarchist. Yeah, fair. Here we go. Signature dish.
For me to cook. See, this is where we have problems, isn't it? Probably chili.
Chili, a vegan chili?
Yeah. On like, nice. Maybe I'd have like I'd make nachos.
Oh yeah.
With chili on it, with cheese and guac.
This is the part, Sean, where I now tell you who I predicted to be your guests.
Okay.
Right.
Were you close on any of them?
I'd say I was slightly close on... I'd say I was close on one.
Yeah.
But you can decide whether that is close or not. For Alive, I went for your old history teacher. So...
million miles away.
I went for Tina Fey.
Yeah, good. Liz Lemon was one of the one. Her character in the book was almost going to be my
would have been great choice. Right.
I think me and her share the same culinary instincts of just eating greasy crap. But I genuinely wouldn't know what to say if I met her. I'm such a huge
the fan. Character or Tina Fey? Tina Fey.
Both. I mean, if it was the character, I'd be a lot more worried, but the human being.
I would assume Tina Fey's had a breakdown.
something's wrong here.
Dead, I went with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Now, this is because you and I share a very similar thing here, and that we both absolutely love the film Moneyball.
Yes.
I think it's incredible, despite the fact that no matter how many times I think about that film and the premise of it, I can't understand how it works so well, but it just works.
Yeah. Are you like a fan of baseball or like Americana or stuff?
Like, I want to be a fan of baseball, but then whenever I watch it, I realise it is just too long and too slow. Mm. But I've been to a couple of games. I hadn't been to a game when I watched this film, so this film may have helped that.
Because I don't care about it at all.
Right.
I don't have a hatred of it, but it just means nothing to me. A lot of the stuff that underpins that film means nothing to me. Yeah, it is unquestionably my favourite film. Like, I think it's so brilliant. Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. And I'd say it's probably the coolest film. I think it's so cool.
Yeah, it's like, it's great. I think it is. The script is the star, I think. It's just every scene is so brilliant. Every character is so well defined, and I love it. I'm glad that you like it.
I love it. And I went for Philip Seymour Hoffman because he's in it and he's dead.
Yeah.
So that was that.
Fit both the criteria.
For fictional, now this is the one I'd say is the closest. Not close, but the closest is I went for Picard.
Yeah, it was top five. It was top five.
Oh, right.
So it could have been him. I just think it would have been such a heavy. I think it would have been such a heavy dinner if I had Jean-Luc Picard and Napoleon.
It's a weird evening.
Me, and also just the thought of having I've got to set up these people nachos in a second. These guys are like, what is this?
I reckon I don't know, maybe Picard's the only one that would slightly understand the benefits of a vegan diet.
Yeah, I think he would. I mean, he's a cultured guy. He's a big fan of history. He'd get a kick out of it. Make no mistake, he'd get a kick out of it. But, well, I don't know. I think with R2-D2, it's like, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun.
You're getting a cheeky droid.
I'm not a massive Star Trek fan. I wouldn't even say I'm a Star Trek fan, but I could appreciate that. It'd be a cool guy to meet.
I always think like meeting Patrick Stewart would be so cool. I've never met him. I know some people who have met him, but apparently he's really great. But yeah. I'm also a bit like, I think I just want to meet the character. That's the problem. In my head, he's so synonymous with that one role. I mean, he's good in all the things, isn't he? He's good in, I don't know what else he's in.
In Extras.
He's very good
at
that.
Bring it back around.
He's maybe my favourite one. He's maybe my favourite guest they had in that.
Him and what's his name?
McKellen.
McKellen. Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Those two together are a great bunch. Do they have a podcast together or something? I feel like they should.
Yeah, it's about dinner party guests, I think.
Sean, it's a lovely day. And I'm sure you want to go outside for a walk. I mean, do what you want. But one more thing. We have to decide which of your guests we're putting through to the ultimate dinner party.
Because who else has gone on? Is there going to be overlap, do you think?
There's no overlap so far with Napoleon or R2-D2. You're safe.
All right. And no one's chosen Mr. Hubert. Okay. It's a tough one. I think the problem is you can't. I think Napoleon's one of those guys. He's like your mate who you know is kind of trouble. I wouldn't feel comfortable bringing him most places. Whereas I think R2-D2, it's like he's the life and soul, no matter where he goes. So I'd have to go with the little droid. I think.
I actually think you're right. You're going to have probably a bit of a tough conversation when we're all just sat opposite our favourite people having the dinner. But after that, when the drinks get, everyone's going to love the fact that he's there.
Especially if I've already had a dinner party with the other two.
Right,
I'm just not sure. I'm like, God, I think I've done enough. I mean, I've learned enough about you guys. Whereas I think R2's antics, you know, I mean, they've kept me entertained my whole life.
I mean, as we said, one of the most famous fictional characters ever created. Nobody, even my mum, who would never have seen a second of Star Wars, he comes in the room, I was going to say walk, but sort of wheels into the room. She knows who that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she'd also know who Napoleon is, I assume. But...
who's in there? Am I allowed to ask?
Prince is there. Joanna Lumley.
I mean, already this sounds like a great time.
Sean, classic bit of any podcast. Where can people find you?
You follow me on Twitter if you want, at Sean McLaughlin. Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've forgotten what my Instagram thing is. Sean McLaughlin comedian, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that would do it. If they search you.
If you search me, job done. Or just listen to my albums or watch my show on YouTube.
Yeah, do watch it. It's so good.
Thanks, man.
So that was Sean. I hope you enjoyed it. It was genuinely as chaotic as it was fun to do. I'm doing all I can to keep this show under 1 hour. So as usual, please rate and subscribe and share, and I will be back again next week. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.